the costumes, the motorcycles, the sometimes wildly improbable hairstyles on the male leads.
We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers.
You raise walls, I destroy them. Let's see who prevails.
Just because something works doesn't mean that it cannot be improved.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure.
Allow my sword to join you in the fight against evil.
The world needs us to chase dreams.
We have to dedicate ourselves each and every single day to this fight because I can't do it alone.
You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of Righteous Kicks, the podcast where two science fiction writers geek out about men in spandex bodysuits who kick evildoers to death in abandoned quarries until they explode.
To be fair, it is not all spandex. Some of that is plexiglass.
This is actually very true. Thank you for reminding me. I'm Brandon O'Brien. I'm a speculative fiction writer, performance poet, and film school dropout from Trinidad and Tobago.
I'm Iori Cusano. I'm a science fiction and fantasy writer, grad school dropout turned office lady, and professional shit poster.
And this is what makes it like perfect for us to talk about Kamen Rider in particular, because we're both very avid science fiction buffs who also really enjoy how silly this thing is.
It is silly. Remember the Iron Chef battle?
So many things that we're just going to mention out of context here, with the promise that at some point in the future, someone else is going to experience this and go, oh, that's what they were talking about. Why is this here?
We will get around to all the wildest moments in Kamen Rider history. And that's a long-ass history, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So, Shotaro Ishinomori created Kamen Rider, starting with Kamen Rider Ichigo, in the 1970s, 1971 to be precise, and then at the end of Kamen Rider Black RX in 1989, there was a brief pause before returning in 2000, and it's been going on ever since.
Now, we divide Kamen Rider into the Showa and Heisei eras, based on when on the Japanese imperial calendar they were created. So everything from 71 to 89 is considered a Showa series because it was made during the Showa period. Before the Heisei period started, we switched emperors. A new imperial reign began. So now all the Kamen Riders that take place in the current imperial reign are called Heisei. I am waiting to see what the next phase of Kamen Rider will be because our emperor is actually going to be abdicating a few months from now.
Yes, this is a thing because this year's Rider, Kamen Rider Gio, is literally on the cusp of new imperial reign. And that means that we expect to somehow discover what the literal future of Kamen Rider is supposed to look like at this point, because the series is literally making predictions about what that period will look like for Kamen Rider, which is actually kind of neat. The show, however, is really weird.
It is. Now, the very first Kamen Rider in 1971 is actually real relevant to the cultural moment we are having in America, because Kamen Rider fought Nazis.
This is true. Almost all of Kamen Rider is kind of responding to fascism, either idealistically or sometimes literally, which we're going to have to get to at some point. But yeah, one of the things I think drew me in particular to Kamen Rider is the fact that it makes a lot of very clear statements about kinds of overarching hostility that exists in certain spaces that are sometimes literal fascism and sometimes just a kind of image of what it looks like when power goes unchecked.
This is probably the moment at which we tell what got us into the show.
This would be a nice time to do that. What got you into Kamen Rider?
The costumes. The motorcycles. The sometimes wildly improbable hairstyles on the male leads.
Which did it first for you? Was it the costumes or the hair?
So I actually really love the costume design of the original Kamen Rider with that flowing red scarf. Like, iconic. Not the greatest choice for someone going around via motorcycle, but iconic.
Very much so. It's one of the first things that people, like, rely on in terms of an image when it comes to illustrating Kamen Rider. The second thing being the very stylized helmets that typically resemble, like, bug faces is the way that they're referred to a lot by other fans. They're very, very striking costumes. Which is, in part, one of the things that got me into it in the very, very early moments as well. That the costumes don't go out of their way to look like images of exaggerated strength. They're just very stylized costumes. And some of them look really cool and really flashy and really extra. And those kinds of stylistic decisions draw my eye a lot. And I think that a lot of people have like a favorite look that makes some of their favorite series or some of their favorite characters stand out to them because their costumes are so peculiar and stand out.
And then we get to Kamen Rider Double, where we have fashion all the time.
All of the fashion. I look forward to us having conversations about Kamen Rider Double's looks.
Oh yeah. The show that brought back drop crotch trousers.
So I want to ask, what is the very first Kamen Rider that you started watching?
Started watching and watched all the way through are different things. So when I was a kid, I saw various Showa Riders on TV, but, you know, I never saw enough of them to piece together a coherent narrative, especially because some of it was Kamen Rider and some of it was stronger and some of it was black. So I really had no idea what was going on with the overarching story. The first one that I actually watched start to finish was Kabuto.
Ah, and what were your thoughts on Kabuto when you got through it? What did you think about Kamen Rider in general as a result of finishing Kabuto? I should rather ask.
To this day, Kabuto remains my favorite Kamen Rider series. I thought it went a lot of dark places for something that I had kind of interpreted as a kid's show at first. Also, the music was just amazing. They got Yuki from TRF to do the theme song. TRF was one of Japan's, like, really huge J-pop sensations in the early mid-90s.
Okay.
And so this was kind of like Japan's big entry into mid-90s dance music. And Komuro Tetsuya did a lot of their production. He's this absolutely legendary producer. I mean, he also sings and stuff himself, but we mainly know him for producing other people's disco.
Okay. I mean, I do remember Kabuto having some, like, very standout music, but a lot of Heisei-era Kamen Rider has a lot of very snappy music that whenever action suddenly ramps up, you find yourself suddenly enjoying what's playing in the background out of nowhere.
Well, the music through the ages really does reflect the changing aesthetic of television and of the pop culture scene in Japan.
Because you get a lot of very clear pop influences later Heisei, but there is a lot of disco, some moments of jazz that pop up in early Kamen Rider, if I'm not mistaken. The soundscape of Kamen Rider as a franchise is really interesting to me because not only is it an attempt to remain musically current, but the music is also often really good in its own right without being like necessarily attached to a media property. Sometimes the songs are just good.
Right. I remember when Double came out, I was so excited that Kamiki Aya was doing the theme song because when I had been a senior in high school, she was my absolute favorite singer.
And that theme song rocks. I'm pretty sure when I started watching Double, that was... I would just, like, listen to that randomly. It's like, this song is what the folks call a bop. I can listen to this all the time. I often don't even know who these musicians are, but they just make good music. And that gets me into everything that they make. Because I started actually watching Kamen Rider from Oz. A friend recommended it to me because a friend recommended it to him. And I was like, this sounds like I'm not going to enjoy it, but I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. And I remember the music feeling like, it felt like I wasn't watching TV, if that makes sense. Oz starts with a very ska-esque, very lively theme song, and then somewhere closer to like the third act of the entire series, things are remotely terribly dark, and this is still the theme song. And it, something about that relationship between those two things made me want to continue going and seeing how this franchise really deals with that kind of disconnect between what it considers dramatic and what it considers silly and energetic and childish, because a lot of people assume that Kamen Rider is a very immature series when you try to describe it to people, but it's actually really often very mature in general.
It goes some dark places. I was surprised at how many beloved characters died during Kabuto.
I mean, like, we haven't even gotten to, like, conversations about series like Kamen Rider Amazon, where this series is literally shorter than every other series precisely because people didn't know how to deal with how many living things die very bloodily on, well, often not blood, but yeah, Ika is still blood. If you kill a monster, it still bleeds. So yeah, like, there is, I don't want to even imply that depth is something unlikely to happen in Kamen Rider because it happens all the time, but it happens in a space where you're often assuming that something not really tragic or not really dramatic is supposed to happen because you get accustomed to all of these bright colors and then this dramatic moment blindsides you and you're still recovering from the fact that it's happened on screen and in often very visceral ways. But that kind of storytelling kept me going when I started discovering Heisei Kamen Rider, and it got me to go back and watch things that I hadn't seen yet.
Right. You have seen a lot more Kamen Rider than I have.
Have I? What series have you seen?
The only one I have watched all the way through is Kabuto. Even the shorter ones tend to have enough episodes that I miss some along the way. I frequently, gosh, this tells you about a lot about the kind of bars I go to. I frequently just pick up an episode of or two of whichever one's on rerun late night when I go to the bar.
I see.
So I have seen a lot of Kamen Rider in the background with the sound off. That's been my main interaction with a lot of the more recent Heisei.
Okay, I don't know what part of that strikes me as most interesting. That you watch Kamen Rider in bars, or that Kamen Rider shows on mute in bars?
I live in Ikebukuro. It's nerd bars. They just put it on in the background.
I think that's the most awesome thing ever, and now I need to visit that place. I need to... And how much does it cost to fly to Japan now?
I mean, you do need to visit because I live a 30-minute walk from the official Kamen Rider restaurant. Field trip.
Yes! It'll be the coolest thing ever. That's going to be a special episode. So, I have seen, to answer your question, I've seen every Kamen Rider since Double, from top to bottom. And I've seen all of Kabuto, although I forget most of it. Most of Hibiki, about the top half of Decade, and all of Blade, which I have so many feelings about.
Blade. I am not sure which one Blade is. For a second I was like, is that the vampire one? But no, the vampire one's Kiva, right?
Yes, that's Kiva. Blade, the visual motif of Kamen Rider Blade, is playing cards. But that's not what's important. What's important is, there is a protagonist in Kamen Rider Blade named Tachibana, who is an asshole. But we'll get to that point. we get to the point where he responds to somebody lifting him off the ground by shooting him in the chest.
No, I just want you to back up for a moment to the bit where the one called Kamen Rider Blade, the motif is not swords but playing cards.
Yep. The motifs in Kamen Rider don't... I'm sure you've gotten to this point where the motifs in Kamen Rider often don't make sense. Like, the fact that the theme of Kamen Rider Gaim is both the Sengoku era and fruits. Or that Kamen Rider Drive is the only Kamen Rider, a hero with the word rider in its name, where every rider before him has a motorcycle, who drives a car.
Okay, I'm not sure where the title's coming from on Gaim, but Drive, that at least implies car. Kabuto, everyone's going to be insect-themed. Kabuto's a kind of beetle. Kiva. Okay, Kiva means fang or tooth. Great, that works. That fits. Double. Yeah, there's two guys. So, I'm still stuck on theme and title are not matching here for Blade.
No, they don't. Some Ace of Spades reference that is happening on a higher literary wavelength than I am responsible for. But it didn't matter to me, I just went along with it. And then sometimes you're very lucky where the title of a Kamen Rider series does exactly what it says on the tin. Like, Kamen Rider Ghost. I wonder what that's gonna be. Maybe there'll be ghosts in it, and then it turns out there are ghosts in it. Which are also parkas, but I guess you take some and you leave some.
Parkas, as in the jacket.
Yeah, ghosts that you wear as clothes, who are also all of the ghosts of very famous Western heroes, like Beethoven and Billy the Kid. When I say it out loud, it sounds hilarious. Is Billy the Kid even real?
That's a really good question, and I don't know. I'm just... Beethoven? I mean, Beethoven's reputed to have had a temper, but I don't know if Beethoven goes around punching people.
I mean, every time I stop to think about why something happens in a Kamen Rider series, I want to go at length about how it's supposed to make sense and not sound dumb. Hey, Billy the Kid is real. Hi, Billy the Kid. Do you know that years after you pass in 1881, you will become a jacket that a teenage dead boy will wear in order to defeat the monstrous equivalent of a mobster? Because it's the cutest thing in the world.
I mean, we're definitely going to have the conversation at some point about the way we treat dead folk heroes and historical figures in Japan. Probably when we get to Gaim.
Oh yes, definitely. I think Gaim is a good place to do that. Because people have the capacity to turn into gods in Gaim. But also, I think another thing that we should probably briefly mention is what kinds of characters and character motivations stand out to you when it comes to Kamen Rider as a franchise? Because even though heroes are mostly completely different people from one franchise to the next, there is a kind of heroic through line about how people have relationships to power in the literal and often metaphorical sense, that sometimes heroism is simply being put in a situation where bad people attempt to exploit you for things that are innate to you, and you respond to that by using that power against them.
So, for me, some of it is straight actor appeal. Like, one of the reasons that I love Yaguruma from Kamen Rider Kabuto is because he's played by Tokuyama Hidenori, who is legit, like, pretty cool rock star. God, Kabuto did have good casting. The character archetype that tends to resonate most for me is, I suck at this, but I keep trying.
Ah, like heroes who are put in a position where they know nothing about what's happening, but they're motivated by the desire to do the thing regardless.
The underqualified hero.
Interestingly, I like the polar opposite of that, more often than not. The hero who enters the story perfectly competent and is constantly trusted by everyone around him to know what's going on. Because he always has a later arc where he finds himself out of his depth and somebody who we didn't expect to be in a position to help him will help him.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are actually really neat. So yeah, I feel like on a character level, even though everybody is doing essentially the same thematic thing every series, there is room all the time to ask questions about why is this person doing this thing? And what does that mean for you, the person who is watching this series, and how you can do the thing, if that makes sense.
And sometimes the thing is resist fascism. Sometimes it's resist evil corporations. And sometimes it's channel ghosts.
The other really interesting thing about Kamen Rider is the parts that supposed to not make sense still make perfect sense. Like, what we mean by channel ghosts is simply learn from the legacies of those who have passed before you, even if they have nothing to do with you. I mean, it's very difficult to justify the fruit theme of Gaim other than eat your veggies. But there is also a conversation about resisting the urge to engage in violence in the first place in a show where everybody dies at least once. So, like, Kamen Rider is often really playing with really complicated ideas about how we relate to power, but in really simple and interesting ways that you can follow without having to do a lot of head work to understand what's happening on screen. People just kick each other and win or lose.
But another persistent theme throughout Kamen Rider is actually community. It's about, I am engaging in this fight as part of my duty to other people. Not necessarily people I know or personally care about, but I care about them because they're there and we're sharing space.
Like how in Kamen Rider Double, both heroes are primarily motivated by a love of their city just as an abstract place full of people in it. Many of whom they don't know or don't personally care about, but they've literally defended their worst enemies because their enemies come from this place and don't deserve to suffer.
That was definitely one of my favorite aspects of Double.
Double is really neat.
Shaky understanding of how USB drives work, though. Gotta give him that.
Yep. I don't think you should put that USB drive there, friend. Please remove that from your body. But yeah, I'm really eager to use this podcast as an opportunity to have conversations with people about this thing that they may not know or know in a context that isn't surrounded by shows like it, because the only other parallel that a lot of people I've had conversations with about Kamen Rider, the only thing that they can compare it to is Power Rangers, because it resembles a thing that is literally in the same family as Kamen Rider, which is Super Sentai.
Yeah, they're both tokusatsu shows, special effects shows. And the American Power Rangers does recycle a lot of fight sequence from the Japanese Sentai shows, which is one of the reasons I think that they cast teenagers for the American one, had to make the height differences a little less noticeable.
I did not know that may have been the reason. We may have to do further investigation for that. But like, one of the things I'm always curious about when it comes to introducing Kamen Rider to friends is how they compare that to Western science fiction. Because Western science fiction is typically in an entirely different visual and philosophical space, where it's always about proving that you have capacity for capacity's sake, for instance, or not giving way to an enemy's power simply because you don't deserve to lose, regardless of what your actual morality is.
One of the things I really appreciate in Kamen Rider is how few characters have plot armor. Being the hero doesn't insulate you from loss. Being one of the main ensemble does not protect you from death. Not to say that this is like Game of Thrones level, let's kill them all.
Mm-hmm. You make a very good point, in particular, that Sometimes there are Kamen Rider series where the hero loses first and often, and that's precisely what they're supposed to do for that episode to have its value. Whereas, like, a lot of Western sci-fi in particular, loss is this big end of act two thing that is supposed to show the hero losing faith in everything that they believe in. Whereas sometimes Kamen Riders lose because they thought the wrong thing and they think the right thing immediately afterward.
I especially like it when defeat actually triggers a couple episodes of downtime and reflection.
The moment when the heroes learn precisely what about their ideology or perspective needed recalibration just by spending time with their family, or sometimes literally eating a hot meal.
Yeah, it's very much about, like, stepping back and taking the time to nourish both yourself and others and letting that show you what you need to prioritize, which is kind of a Studio Ghibli way of saying it, but...
But it's not wrong. Yeah, those things are particularly meaningful to me because, like, I feel like the closest ideological parallel that comes to mind between Kamen Rider and Tokusatsu like it and Western science fiction television is probably Doctor Who, and even then there is space to understand exactly how different those things are, because Doctor Who typically never actually changes his mind about anything or gains perspective about a moment. I mean, it happens, but it's never as significant as it is sometimes in Kamen Rider. Like, I'm curious how much room there is for Kamen Rider to be an example of science fiction television that Western audiences can gain the same kind of ideological perspective that they typically ascribe to things like Doctor Who, or how some fans talk about Harry Potter, for instance, in those same ways, but with a different cultural understanding that in a lot of instances is equally valuable, if not sometimes more so.
So one of the things I've found that keeps a lot of Western audiences from getting super into Kamen Rider is the sheer volume of all of it. Like, even just hearing us talk about it now, we've covered a lot of ground in not a lot of time. So one of the things we'll be doing with this podcast is taking it a series at a time and breaking it into more digestible chunks. And we'd love it if you want to watch along with us so that we can just all shriek together about, oh my god, they went there.
Yes, because another thing that we didn't mention, which is probably going to also illustrate exactly the wide scope of Kamen Rider as a franchise, is that every series is literally a year long. As in 48 to 52 episodes every year of what is, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere near 28 or 29 series in its entire history. So it's gonna take a lot of watching, but we're going to give you, hopefully, some digestible chunks that you can watch along with us, which obviously gets to the next question of, what do we want to watch first? Because I have a suggestion. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
How about, in this vast franchise of men in spandex bodysuits riding bikes, we watch the series that doesn't have a bike in it?
I have doubts about this concept. What makes you think that Drive is going to be more accessible for newbies? Let's start with your reasoning.
Okay, beyond the fact that I actually really enjoy Drive, there are spaces that I think that make it more accessible, which is, first, it tries really hard to be a police procedural-esque series. The protagonist of Kamen Rider Drive, Tomari Shinosuke, is a police officer who works with a special unit of his local police force who investigates special interdimensional weirdness that happens in their area. He also has a talking car. His car talks to him. His seatbelt is literally the thing that he uses to transform. All of this sounds really dumb, but it's actually really, really dark when it gets to a point. So yeah, I think that there are those little other genre spaces where people can at least go, well, I know what this is supposed to be, so I can just follow along in that space.
Okay. Are you down for hearing me screech about propaganda and the cultural role of police in Japan?
Yes, please, because I do think there is a conversation to be had about not only propaganda, but how that range of Kamen Rider series around that point in the Heisei era is dedicated a lot to the public service.
Right.
And I feel like you might have thoughts about that.
Yeah, this does have a strong example of that theme of serving one's community.
But what does serving one's community mean in this context? And do we really want people to serve their communities like this? I guess that's a question we're going to have to bring up when we actually watch it. So, how do you feel about watching the first 16 episodes of Kamen Rider Drive?
Ooh, homework.
I mean, it's homework for all of us.
Yes, and as someone who dropped out of grad school, you know that I probably actually did enjoy homework. I wouldn't have been in grad school otherwise.
I mean, I dropped out of film school, so doing homework on specifically television is a thing that excites me very much. So I actually look forward to having that conversation about Kamen Rider Drive as we watch it in what should reasonably be 1/3 chunks, which is the process that we'll be doing for all of the series going in a random order, more or less. But we're hoping that our listeners will also watch along by any means necessary and actually tag along and hear us randomly scream about all of the silliness that we've seen. So I'm excited about that.
I am definitely excited to get started with this. I am looking at the info page for this now, and oh boy, you didn't tell me that the music was going to be amazing.
The music is going to be amazing, though. The theme song, I Have Feelings. There was a point very recently where I knew the theme song for Drive from top to bottom. It's no longer the case, but I look forward to that returning. If you hear me terribly humming the song in between the next couple of episodes, I'm sorry.
I am familiar with the song as something that happens in the karaoke bars that I go to. But I did not realize that the original artist is the vocalist from Sophia, and it looks like they dragged in the drummer from Siam Shade.
I'm not familiar with any of these acts, but I just want to say the song is really awesome.
This is them putting together, like, an Avengers for Japanese rock music.
I'd believe it, because it's really... I don't even want to just say it's an extreme song, but it does a lot very well. It sounds like the kind of thing you just get the best of the best at what they do to just write it and leave. I care about that song a lot. I'm sorry.
It's excellent. And someday we will get to the music that I have feelings about. And oh boy, enjoy the entire history of pop music vomited at you.
I look forward to experiencing that conversation. But until then, I do think that we have covered everything that we need to cover tonight.
Yes, I feel that this has been a productive morning. For everybody else in a different time zone, we've gone full global here. I'm broadcasting from Japan.
I'm broadcasting from Trinidad and Tobago.
And you're probably listening in America, aren't you?
And this has been the very first episode of Righteous Kicks, and we thank you so much for listening in, and we hope that you will join us not only on the next podcast, but in the act of watching the first few episodes of Kamen Rider Drive. Until then, be transformed and stay righteous.
If you would like to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, our webpage, skiffyandfanty.com, or you can even send us an email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. The intro music for this podcast was taken from Rock Thing by Creo. You can find out more about their music on freemusicarchive.org.